Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev, text number 4. Drishtva nipatitam bhumha divas juttam hivamaram pannemo pandava bhishmam Sanuga saha chakrina Drishani patitam bhumho Divaschutam ibhamaram Pannamo pandava bhishmam Sanuga saha chakrina cousin of Maharaj Yudhisthira as well as the intimate friend of Arjuna. But all the family members of the Pandavas knew Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord, although conscious of his supreme position, always behaved in a humanly custom, and so he also bowed down before the dying Bhishma Dev, as if he were one of the younger brothers of King Yudhisthira. Mm. Nivatitam bhumho divastutam vivamaram pandimu pandava bhishmam sanugahasa chakrina. Seeing him, Bhishma, lying on the ground like a demigod fallen from the sky, the Pandava king Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers and Lord Krishna, bowed down before him. So, here we see that Lord Sri Krishna is behaving like an ordinary human being in this instance. Sometimes Lord Krishna displays that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at other times he behaves like an ordinary human being. When there is a need to demonstrate that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially to atheistic people, or Mayavadis, materialistic people who do not believe that Krishna is God or there is God, Krishna displays his divine attributes as the Supreme Lord. But otherwise, Krishna behaves in an ordinary way, like an ordinary human being. Still quite extraordinary, but he acts in a way that is befitting his relationship with his devotees. When he acts in a way like an ordinary human being, in essence, he's fostering a relationship, loving reciprocation with his devotees. And if he were to display his almighty opulence, it would actually interfere with the loving sentiments of his devotees. Therefore, you see that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna displayed his universal form to Arjuna. Arjuna actually wasn't particularly interested in seeing the universal form. Generally Vaishnavas who follow Lord Krishna are not particularly interested in the universal form. They're more interested in Krishna's human-like form and human-like activities. But Arjuna wanted Krishna to display his godlike position, because he knew that in the future everyone would want to say that God is dead. In fact, that Krishna is not God, or this or that, anything but that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, about the time that Srila Prabhupada arrived in America, there was an article in the Time magazine that God is dead. Big front page cover there. So that was the atmosphere. Generally, people in the world, the nature of the material world is Maya, and Maya's influence is that one forgets God. So, as Srila Prabhupada points out, that the more one is involved with Maya, the more forgetful one becomes of the Supreme Lord. And in the spiritual world, is different, because in the spiritual world, Krishna, or the Supreme Lord, is actually the central focus of everyone's attention. That Mother Yashoda is always thinking of Krishna, and Nanda Maharaj is always thinking of Krishna, the gopis are always thinking of Krishna, the cows are always thinking of Krishna, the trees are always thinking of Krishna, the water is always thinking of Krishna, all the various elements of Not like here, where there is, you know, some things are unconscious, but actually in the spiritual world, the entire, you know, all the residents of Vrindavan and Vrindavan itself, they're all thinking of Krishna like that. So that is the opposite of Maya. In the material world, Maya means that one is forgetfulness of Krishna to one degree or another. And but sometimes Krishna, he displays his ordinary human-like activities because they allow very natural loving reciprocation. So therefore, again, we see that when Arjuna wanted Krishna to display his universal form to you know, destroy the atheistic philosophies that pop up in this age of Kali, that even Arjuna's friendship with Krishna was somewhat disturbed in seeing Krishna's great power, and then he became fearful seeing the potency of the Supreme Lord, feeling very, very insignificant. You know, Srila Prabhupada pointed that out in one morning walk. You know, Arjuna was so fearful because in the presence of the universal form, Krishna displaying his godlike power, he felt just so insignificant. So here is this very a person feeling so insignificant, and yet he's remembering that he was being very familiar with Krishna, who was such a great and powerful personality, sometimes joking with him, sometimes criticizing him, sometimes calling him untruthful, or different joking words like this. So for the non-devotees though, when they see something like this, that if Krishna appears before Bhishma Dev, and then before Bhishma Dev, Krishna will pay his obeisances, offer his respects, they actually take it as proof that Krishna is not God, that he's an ordinary person. There are similar instances in the Ramayana where Krishna offers his respects to Lord Shiva. There are many different instances. Therefore, people believe that Lord Shiva, is actually superior to Lord Ramchandra. And here, because Krishna is offering his respects to Bhishma, and many impersonalists actually comment upon the Srimad Bhagavatam, although really they have no access to comment upon the Srimad Bhagavatam. As far as I understand, Sankaracharya didn't comment. No, Sankaracharya didn't comment upon the Srimad Bhagavatam, and therefore, because he knew that it was untouchable, by the Mayavadis. And even though he commented upon the Bhagavad Gita, he ultimately admitted that Krishna is not different from Narayana, and Narayana is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to the material existence, and one should, give up all their Mayavad word jugglery and just chant Govinda, Govinda, Govinda like this. So, but the Srimad Bhagavatam, he couldn't actually touch upon, because it was still the Mayavadis, although they have no real access to the Srimad Bhagavatam, they do comment upon it. And because they're influenced by Maya, they want to forget and also help other people or make other people forget that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you know, generally in India, one thing Srila Prabhupada found when he was preaching in India was that he became, you know, very frustrated that, you know, whenever he would present something from the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, the people, his own, you know, country people would offer 100 different alternative explanations. You know, they would actually offer every explanation except the one coming through the line of disciplic succession. that, you know, it's actually very, very dangerous. Sometimes, you know, even amongst the congregation, you find this. Because in ISKCON and here in Melbourne, we see that, you know, we are associated with, in one sense, also the Hindu culture. And therefore, you know, there are thousands and thousands of people who, you know, will say, yes, you know, I am a Vaishnava. Yes, we have worshipped Krishna for many generations. Yes, you know, we are, you know, devotees in ISKCON as well. Actually, you know, thousands and thousands of people like that. In one sense, if you then think, well then, yes, let us discuss some Krishna Katha, you'd be surprised how quickly they begin to speak, you know, about Krishna in a very unauthorized way. In fact, the real surprise is if they actually speak about Krishna in a bona fide way. That's that's the real surprise. So common it is for people to just, you know, misinterpret, because the Mayavadis and the impersonalists and the materialists and even some of the Vaishnava sects over hundreds and hundreds of years have actually distorted the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. there was one morning walk with Srila Prabhupada where he was discussing about the nature of the soul, and he was discussing that, you know, the scientists, how in one sense they, by their scientific education, they simply become more and more bewildered. They become, as Bhaktivinoda Kaur says, by their scientific education, they become an ass. You know, as Prabhupada says, a scientific ass. A very scientific knowledge just makes them a scientific ass. Why? Is because, you know, one may think that is very harsh. But factually, it's because they find so many different things to think of, but never of Krishna. You know, the nature of scientific thought is that you'll look at everything, but you'll never think of Krishna. Therefore, you know, they try to discover the, you know, the atom. And they spend, you know, they spend billions of dollars actually, you know, with their, they have the machines which smash the atoms, and then they look inside the atom and they find that there are the protons and the neutrons, and then they smash them and they look inside them and they find that there are, what's the next one? What do they call that?
Protons.
Neutrons. What's in there? Electrons. Yeah. And electrons, and then they'll smash them, and in there are quarks, and then, you know, they're trying to, they sort of try and break it down to, you know, 22 decimal places, you know, the size, you know, these little, they say that some of the particles they can't actually see. Yeah.
Nucleus, cytoplasm, protoplasm.
Yes.
And the mitochondria, so many things.
Yes. We say that in English. So then, you know, they, as Prabhupada puts it, you know, they spend many lifetimes, you know, over generations, always searching out these particles, but they never try to, you know, bother to find the particle of the soul. You know, the, they find so many, they're always looking for the material particle, their mind is fixed upon the material energy. Ultimately, you know, their science just fixes them upon, and you know, they can, the nature of the material energy, of course, is that the more you absorb yourself in the material energy, it will just keep you engaged unlimitedly, you know, for you know, time immemorial. You can stay in the material world and you'll never run out of material things to look at. You know, there will always be something more in the material world. But he, you know, so he was saying that it is a you know, they waste so much time, but you know, they could be looking for the evidence to support the existence of the spiritual particle. And of course, by finding that, in essence, they find it is the pathway to then God realization, because the spirit soul is one tiny little spiritual particle of the Supreme Spirit. So, but in this way, the scientific education makes an asset of people, because it just makes them absorbed in material consciousness and real knowledge, which consists of knowledge of the soul, knowledge of the super soul, and how the soul is entangled in the material energy, you know, under the supervision of the super soul. That those three aspects, which consist of real knowledge, that they never come across. So, of course, in Srila Prabhupada's you know, preaching, he would always try to help people to understand from the very beginning platform. First, you know, look at the nature of the material energy that you're suffering. Then, understanding that you're suffering, what is the solution? You transcend that by realizing your eternal spiritual nature, which is different from the material body. Gradually, if you become fixed in that understanding, then what does the spirit soul do? The spirit soul engages in bhakti yoga, which is eternal activities in relationship to the super soul. In this way, when one becomes fixed in that, one can become liberated, and even above that, one can actually attain this love of God, you know, in these apparently human-like activities with the Supreme Lord. So, but starting from the very beginning, but what Srila Prabhupada found was that although the although generally in India there is an understanding that we are not this body, Prabhupada found that even the great scholars, so-called scholars of the Bhagavad Gita, were actually still in the bodily conception of life to a great degree. Therefore, they actually hadn't understood the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a postgraduate study. Therefore, you know, he pointed out, you know, people often glorify Gandhi as a great scholar of the Bhagavad Gita, as a great saintly person. But Srila Prabhupada will quickly point out, well, that you know, he hasn't understood even the first lesson of spiritual life, that we're not this body, is still in the bodily conception of life. What is the proof of that? Because he is his policies are based upon nationalism, and nationalism is an expansion of the bodily conception of life, because actually in the Vedas, the concept of nationalism is not there. There's no nationalism in the Vedic literatures, because you know, it's based upon as we see in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that a pandit or one who is in knowledge, he sees equally, you know, the Brahman, you know, the Sudra, the Chandra, the Malecha, the cow, you know, the dog eater. So people of all races and all species, they're seeing equally because they're all made of the same material elements. And also equally because within each living entity is an individual spirit soul of the same spiritual quality. So there's no nationalism. You know, they're just seeing, you know, that oneness. So Gandhi is fighting for nationalism, which is an extension of the bodily conception of life, which means that he hasn't even understood, you know, or he's certainly not practicing himself or teaching others to practice, you know, actually the basic principles of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, Srila Prabhupada could actually point out all of the so-called famous scholars of the Bhagavad Gita, and within just a few seconds he will point out how each and every one of them is completely in the bodily conception of life. You know, what to speak of, therefore, you know, how are they able to understand, you know, the very, very more deeper aspects of, you know, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. But these persons who are in, the result, of course, is when someone is in the bodily conception of life, that means that they're seeing themselves materially. If you're in the bodily conception of life, that means that you're seeing yourself and other persons materially. You're seeing this one is Indian, this one is not. Therefore, nationalism. If you're seeing everything materially, then when you read even the philosophy, even spiritual philosophy, you see it in a material way. That is the problem. And therefore, even though, you know, many persons are acquainted with the Srimad Bhagavatam stories, the stories of Krishna, you know, the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, the different Puranas, they see them all in a material way. You know, that is actually the nature of the Mayavadis. That even, you know, those materialistic people, sometimes they try to become great, you know, philosophers and spiritual teachers, but they have the same disease. They're still seeing things, even though they're trying to study the scriptures and practice the scriptures. Generally, they don't rise beyond that materialistic conception. And some of them even become great scholars or you know, very famous practitioners of the Vedas, and actually don't rise above the jurisdiction of demons, as Prabhupada says. Just like Ravana, you know, Ravana was considered to be, you know, a great follower of Vedic principles, and it comes from also Jarasandha. Many of these demons were particularly well known for how strictly they followed the Vedas, but you know, they could not rise above the jurisdiction of being demons because of their materialistic approach to the Vedas. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada was discussing about as usual, he always tries to help us to understand the ABCs of spiritual life, and then, you know, to really get us then he may, you know, preach about those you know, essence of spiritual life, trying to, you know, get out of the bodily concept of life very, very strongly for a long, long, long time. And when he's satisfied that there is some progress, then he may enter into other topics of Krishna consciousness on a slightly elevated level. Sometimes we see in his discussions that you know, different philosophers, you know, especially when he was in India, would you know, try to bring in aspects of the Srimad Bhagavatam. wanting to present himself, that well, he was, you know, Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, he's preaching you're not this body to his Western disciples. They obviously, you know, need that sort of basic level of understanding, but you know, here we are. You know, we know from birth this you know, history of Krishna. One time Srila Prabhupada was preaching, you're not this body, and then one Indian gentleman said, oh yes, let us discuss about Krishna and the gopis, that surrender, you know, getting to the you know, the other end of the Bhagavad Gita. And you know, the gopis, they understood that in order to surrender to Lord Sri Krishna, they would have to offer all their clothes. You know, when Krishna went to the Jamuna, and the young gopis were there, and he stole their clothes. And this Indian gentleman was saying that, so they understood, in order to, you know, attain salvation, liberation, we actually have to surrender to Krishna, and you know, give up, you know, give away our clothes, and just be, you know, completely surrendered to Krishna's will. So what's wrong with that statement?
Monkeys wear no clothes.
You know, Prabhupada said a very similar thing in that same conversation. That's right. Yes, that's a fact. What else is wrong with that statement? They're already liberated. Yeah, the gopis, you know, their mentality is that, you know, long, long ago, you know, their, you know, whole existence from the very beginning is just thinking of Krishna, and you know, in a complete state that of complete surrender to Krishna. So the problem is there, that actually here is someone presenting Krishna consciousness with a Mayavadi perspective. Prabhupada says it is a Mayavadi perspective because they are seeing the spiritual topic in a material way. That's the Mayavadi. The Mayavadi is actually always present, you know, Krishna, they explain things. And then, of course, people hear from the Mayavadis and they also see things in a materialistic way. So they're seeing that the gopis are actually on a material platform, their material personalities, and that ultimately they can attain, you know, salvation and gradually come to the spiritual platform. What that spiritual platform is, that is another question as to, you know, what the Mayavadis may think. But Srila Prabhupada explained in that morning walk that actually, you know, the Mayavadis purposely interpret Krishna Leela in that way so that they diminish the position of Krishna, and they diminish the position of Krishna's devotees, and they diminish the position of Bhakti Yoga. They actually purposely explain things in that way. And it seems very harmless, but the Mayavadis, you know, they purposely explain that. And then, you know, people in general, they are very, you know, they hear from the Mayavadis, and then their spiritual life becomes very quickly doomed, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. One who hears from the Mayavadi philosophers, then they are, you know, Krishna consciousness can be extinguished. It describes it even a Mahabhagava, even, you know, a very advanced first class devotee of the Lord, who actually hears from the Mayavada, if they hear their commentary on the Vedas, it can actually, you know, make that even first class Uttama Adhikari fall down from the platform of Vaishnavism. What's that?
Satyanash.
Yes, yeah, very, very dangerous. And you know that impersonalism has even infiltrated into some of the Vaishnava sects, you know, the Vaishnava sampradayas, and you know, Mayavad philosophy, material understanding of scripture, you know, Christianity, the Muslim religion, and you know, many of the, you know, what were bona fide religions, many of them are strongly poisoned by impersonalism these days. You know. I remember as a child that, you know, when I used to go to Sunday school, because I had really nice cordial, and, that they used to teach that, you know, there was the Father who was God, and then Jesus was the Son of God. And, you know, very, very distinctly remember being taught that, you know, they were, and then there was the, you know, the spiritual, the Holy Ghost, like a spiritual energy. I always remember the three distinct. Now, of course, you know, you see that when people talk of Christianity, you know, they're talking of God, and then they say Jesus, you know, and then they'll say Jesus is God. And they're just, you know, it's all been mixed in together, merged, you know, that impersonalism. So now, you know, Jesus has become promoted, or God has been demoted, one or the other. They've merged together. So, even in Vaishnavism, today, of course, is the Disappearance Day of Vidyavasan. And as we know, he wrote a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, on the Vedanta Sutra, because I think it was about 1706. I think it was that. He was sent to Golta, somewhere near Jaipur, because the Ramanandis, who are a branch of the Ramanuja Sampradaya, they had challenged that the Gaudiya Sampradaya were actually not a bona fide Sampradaya. That according to the Puranas and the scriptures, there are four Sampradayas, not a fifth one. They challenged in many different ways that they were not bona fide. One of the main ones is that they actually didn't have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So it's understood that in order to be a bona fide succession of, you know, guru, disciple, you know, going all the way back to the original founders of those spiritual organizations, one has to have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta Sutra is the conclusion of the Vedas. So Srila Vyasadeva, he wrote the four Vedas, which in the Upanishads, the Puranas, the Mahabharata, and then he wrote a conclusion in the Vedanta Sutra. So the original Vedas, the four Vedas, are called Shruti Prasthan. Then there's Smriti, there's the Puranas and what have you. That is Smriti Prasthan, or evidence. And Nyaya Prasthan is the Vedanta, or reasoning. So therefore in the Bhagavad Gita you see that Krishna says in the 13th chapter that, you know, this philosophy that even he is speaking has been established and confirmed by, you know, logic and reasoning. And he mentions this, you know, Vedanta Sutra, Bhashya. so that we have the evidences of the Vedas, and at the same time it is presented with all logic and reasoning, so that philosophers can't say, well, yes, you have the evidence of the Vedas, but it doesn't seem to it doesn't seem reasonable. So you have the conclusion in the Vedanta, so that it is irrefutably presented with all logic and reasoning. So the only way you can accept that the conclusion of the Vedas is or the only way you cannot accept it is if you're illogical and unreasonable. But if you follow the proper channels of logic and reason through the Vedanta, you will accept that yes, the conclusion of the Vedas. And ultimately, the conclusion of the Vedas is that everything emanates from the Absolute Truth, Chanmadhyasayyataha, which Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, and begins with the very same aphorism that everything emanates from the Absolute Truth. Who is that Absolute Truth? Lord Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. So, actually, there was some... someone was telling me that... I heard somewhere. They went to a program, and that they were the Vedanta Society, the society, something like that, for studying the Vedanta Sutra. And they've been going for many, many years. Anyway, one devotee went there, and he said, "Do you know what the meaning of Vedanta is?" And I said, "No." As a Vedantist, Vedanta means the end or the conclusion of knowledge, So, they've been studying, philosophy, and they didn't know. They were quite surprised, they were quite interested, that's what it meant. The Ramanandis claimed that the Vaishnavas didn't have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. The Vaishnavas didn't have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered that the Srimad Bhagavatam was the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, because it was an explanation by Srila Vyasadeva. And although the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, as established by Baladeva Vidyabhisan, had a direct link with the Madhva Sampradaya. So there was no question of saying there's a fifth Sampradaya, because he established that this line traces all the way back to Madhvacharya. It's not actually a fifth Sampradaya. And that although Madhvacharya had a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, Baladeva Vidyabhisan presented another commentary in order that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas would not be considered bona fide. But also, the Ramanandis, they also proposed that the devotees in the Gaudiya Sampradaya should not be worshipping Radha Krishna, that they should not worship Radha Krishna before worshipping Lord Narayan, and that Radha and Krishna should not be on the same altar together, they should be worshipped separately because they're not married. Because, it's interesting how all this began, because the Ramanandis, who were from they're a branch of the very powerful, main branch of the Sri Sampradaya. Originally, the Sri Sampradaya worshipped Radha Krishna and Lakshmi Narayan. Gradually, under the Ramanandis, the worship of Radha Krishna was not considered very important at all. It was mostly neglected, and the worship of Sita Rama was strongly established. And therefore, the worship of Sita Ram had been in many, many temples in that part of Jaipur. There are many Vaishnav kings, and those Vaishnav kings had become great devotees, and pretty much the Ramanandi priests were the main priests with the greatest influence. So then what happened was that when the Muslim rulers invaded India, the Govinda temple, the Govinda deity, was actually gradually moved towards Jaipur. And what happened was that the Govinda deity, when Govinda went to live there, he became very, very popular. So then people started worshipping Radha Krishna, and Govinda became more popular than, you know, Lord Ramchandra. So therefore the Ramanandis began to, you know, their influence began to decrease, and because of this they challenged both the worship of Radha Krishna, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who particularly worshipped them, and everything like that. But you can see that even in a Vaishnava Sampradaya, how they were actually worshipping. So, you know, that they were seeing that the worship of Radha and Krishna in, you know, actually materialistic way, and, you know, in incorrect way, not according to the proper understanding of the Vedas or the Acharyas, but in their, according to their own mental speculations. They were considered, what they wanted to do is, one, they wanted the Gaudiya Vaishnavas to be banned from practically worshipping the deities at all, especially Radha Krishna. They wanted the Radha Krishna deities to be taken off the altar. If they were to be worshipped, they were to be worshipped separately, not together. And if they were to be worshipped, one had to worship Lord Narayan and then worship, you know, Radha and Krishna separately. So what happened was that Baladeva Vidyabhusan, the king of Jaipur, who was a great devotee of Govinda, he sent word to Vishwanath Chakravarti the Kaur, who was very elderly at that stage, and Vishwanath Chakravarti the Kaur asked Baladeva Vidyabhusan to write a commentary to go there and to defeat that nonsense. And actually Govinda appeared in a dream to Baladeva Vidyabhusan and said to him that he would personally dictate the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra to him, and that he should not be fearful. So he went. He very quickly, compiled the Govinda Bhashya, which I think in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, is it? Prabhupada dedicates thanks Baladeva Vidyabhusan for compiling the Govinda Bhashya. And of course when he was there, he was so resounding in his defeat of the Ramanandis that they actually wanted to become his disciples, but out of humility he didn't accept. But it's actually, you know, because of Baladeva Vidyabhusan, you know, that we can sit here today and you know, acharyas like that and worship Radha Krishna together and exclusively without worshipping, you know, Lakshmi Narayan first, and so much, you know, wonderful work was done. Today is also the disappearance, I think, of Kangamata Goswamini. Is that? Appearance day, yes. She is also another great Vaishnavi. She was a sannyasini, took to the renounced order of life, and became a great preacher of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And she went to Jagannath Puri, and she used to preach Srimad Bhagavatam there, the Bhagavad Gita. And great rulers of that area, Brahmanas and Vaishnavas became her disciples. So she was a great acharya, acharini. And today is also Gangapuja. I think over 10 days. Probably beginning today, they worship Ganga, the different some, you know, way up in the beginning or different places, right down to where it comes out in the ocean. All right then, so we'll leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments.
One comment, I think you were trying to talk about the protocol of the cells and genes, but you wanted to talk about genes, genetic composition, because genetics has become a very big
genetics, yes.
And as a result, we have got stem cells from the bone marrow, and they are useful for cancer of kidney, cancer of bones. So, no doubt advances have come. But they can't see the soul because they have no spiritual vision.
Yes.
Premanyan Chulita Bhakti Mulu Jinina. Under the eye is changed with the love of God. They can't. So they can't see the soul, soul in the self.
That's right.
So they won't be here.
And you know, there's a lot of people undergo a lot of difficulty. You know, perhaps you know, modern medicine, as you know, sometimes, especially in the latter part of people's lives, you know, is a series of one operation after another, just keeping people alive, extending their lifetime, you know, as far as, you know, people think they can. And literally, you know, the last portion of some people's lives are literally just living between one hospital visit, doctor's visit, you know. And I know, because with my elderly parents and people of that generation, you know, if you sit down and talk to them, you know, the whole conversation, the whole focus of their existence, you know, is there knee operation, the hip operation, you know, this one and that one. Whereas, you know, you would hope at the very last stages of one's life that one, you know, prepares for inevitable death, and certainly to, you know, we look after the body and try to reduce pain and suffering and difficulty as far as possible, but not to the point where we can no longer, you know, it's just not possible to think of Krishna, you know, that's...
Prabhupada says, scientists are very dogmatic. They think they can do anything, but impossible.
Yeah. Death is coming. Death is inevitable.
Ego, positive.
Yes. Except for you. Any other questions or comments? I thought you were going to ask me who is Baladeva Vidya Bhusan. You usually always ask that question, so I saved it for you.
Please.
I'm waiting for it to happen.
Oh, sorry.
Got any questions to have? He's not going to ask me. Who was Baladeva Vidya Bhusan? He is asking. He was actually Gopinath Acharya. Gopinath Acharya, I'm glad you asked. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke Vedanta, explained the proper understanding of Vedanta Sutra to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, I think it was, and Gopinath Acharya heard that explanation, and then he later took birth as Sri Baladeva Vidya Bhusan. Any other questions? Thank you. Hare Krishna.